Decentraland Podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the second episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. So today we are going to talk about a juicy transfer story at the top of the podcast. We have our game picks with our friend Thousand Names. We have two interviews today. I'm glad we are going to talk about Atalanta, who is the hot team in Serie A. I would argue the best storyline in Serie A of the season, kind of a shining light in a overall difficult season in Calcio with our great friend Bruno Bottaro. We, as usual, have some outstanding Twitter questions from our listeners. They really brought it today, so a lot of various topics. We'll have a bonus question segment for our patrons, and we are going to close the podcast talking about Napoli with our dear friend Marco D'Onofrio. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our producer of the show, Alex Goldberg, co-host. So, Alex, this is right up your alley because obviously people know you're really entrenched in the Premier League with Chelsea and you've become a Serie A expert. So I've had a lot of people ask me on how realistic a swap of Mauro Icardi for Lukaku involving Inter and Manchester United would be. So before we get to talking about that transfer rumor, I want to ask you, you know, based on ability, baggage, everything at all, who would hypothetically win this swap? And would you be concerned more of Manchester United should they add Icardi?
It's a good question, David. Honestly, I think Inter would win that potential swap. Not by a lot, not by a country mile by any means. Because Icardi is a very, very good player. And you could also argue that when Manchester United do well, it's not really because of Lukaku. So maybe Icardi could start off well for United and catapult them to the standard that they are used to, that they also now hope for. But no, I'm going with Inter getting the better side of that swap deal. Because on the Lukaku side of things, Inter would be getting a player that is less of a distraction than Icardi, maybe still somewhat of a distraction in Lukaku, but definitely less of a distraction. And if he was at all a distraction, they would still be kind of ready for their striker to be a distraction, as they're pretty well conditioned now for that. But also, they'd be getting a player who's 25 years old and has a lot of top experience already under his belt, and has also been leading the line for Belgium. So I think they'd be getting a sure thing if they just expect a good striker to help them produce. But then on the other side of things, and maybe this is why I'm saying Inter just by default, maybe this is why I'm saying Inter would win the swap deal. On the other side of things, I just don't think Icardi is the right person to be at Manchester United. I don't. Because Manchester United right now are somewhat dysfunctional. And really, you could argue, have a very fragile dressing room. And I don't think bringing in Mauro Icardi, who's got a lot of baggage and also has Juan Di Nara, who's part of his baggage, of course. I don't think bringing in him is at all the move a team like Manchester United should be making right now. I don't think they have the foundation in their club to deal with someone like Icardi. I think the risk would definitely outweigh the reward. I do. It's part of the reason why, as a Chelsea fan, I don't want Chelsea going for Icardi. Sure, the talent is great. And yes, technically, they could improve the team. But I think personality and I think a personality fit is very, very important. So yeah, maybe by default, I'm just saying Inter would win that swap deal because I see a little bit of a mess if Icardi went to Manchester United right now with things still so uncertain at the club. So, David, you said before you asked me, you're getting a lot of questions as to how likely this potential swap is. So let me ask you, how realistic do you think this deal is?
So let's go over a couple of facts first, and then I'll give you a little bit what I think my opinion is on this. So let's start on the Lukaku side. So he made a change in agent not that long ago, significant change. An agent. He went from Mino Raiola to Federico Pastorello. Specific to this rumor, why is this significant? Raiola hasn't really done business with Inter for quite some time. Now, granted, if they've changed the executive director and Beppe Marotta, with whom Raiola worked closely at Juve, but at Inter in general, there really hasn't been much appetite working with Raiola. Pastorello, Lukaku's new agent, on the other hand, very close to Inter. He negotiated Handanovic's extension. He's Candreva's agent, who's also at Inter, works with D'Ambrosio, who's at Inter, doing well, recently became Kita Balde's agent. So definitely that in and of itself, I would say, is significant. In addition to that, Pastorello is the one that negotiated Conte's contract with Chelsea. There's been a lot of rumors of Conte going to Inter. So that's significant there. So we have that. We also had an interview that Lukaku did it was aired yesterday. It was done recently. I'm not sure when it was recorded, but it aired yesterday on Sky Sport. We're recording this on Thursday morning, where he was asked about Serie A, and he said that it would be a dream of his to play in Serie A, but that right now he's focused on Man United. But he said, hey, you know, he knows about Serie A, and he speaks a little bit of Italian because his brother has played for Lazio for a while. So, you know, I take quotes kind of with a grain of salt, but he was on Italian TV saying that, and his agent is close to Inter. So that's one side. The other side is Icardi. Now, Wanda Nara, his wife and agent, even recently this week, she received a prize from this comedy show in Italy, and she said, we're staying at Inter. We're Inter fans. We are committed. She goes, we even matriculated our kids for the school year next year here in Milan. We're not going anywhere. Again, public quotes don't mean that much. The fact that she registered the kids for school, I mean, that's an easy thing to change. I don't know how significant that is. But as I've always said, and this is my personal opinion, I've never felt for one second Mauro Icardi and Wanda wanted to leave Inter. I've said it all along. I think they overplayed their hand, tried to get another raise, and he was underpaid when you look at the landscape in Serie A. But they went too far. They never really wanted to leave. They were doing the bluff, and Inter called their bluff, and here we are. So, you know, does a swap potentially make sense, especially if Conte goes to Inter? He's wanted Lukaku at Juve. He wanted him at Chelsea. Yeah, it definitely makes sense. The other side, I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure that Icardi has any appetite for accepting a transfer. Now, you know, I think if a move happens, a swap probably makes more sense than, say, a transfer fee, because I don't think Icardi's value is anywhere near what it was not that long ago. So this is an interesting situation. We'll definitely keep monitoring it, since, you know, it is late April and a lot can change. For now, let's just stick to the facts, and those are the facts as we see them. So real quick, I know you already kind of talked a little bit about this at the fifth at Inter. Do you think, looking at the landscape in Serie A, Alex, do you see Lukaku as being someone that would do well in the league?
Yeah, I do think Lukaku would do well in Serie A, at least from a statistical point of view, because strikers in Serie A lately have done very well, all different types of strikers, all different kinds of strikers, and also not just strikers on top teams, but you got your Duvan Zapatas, you got your Belottis, you got your Piontechs. Really, Serie A has been a good league for striker success, so I think Lukaku would at least succeed himself. I don't know if he would completely change Inter in the standings. I'm not sure he would elevate them that much, but just as a player, yeah, I do think he would do well. And like I said in the previous answer, he has a lot of experience underneath him. He really does. And already at 25 years old, he has a lot. He has a lot of Premier League goals, and he's got a lot of international goals as well. So I think if his Inter teammates could just understand that he's got a heavy first touch, and they might deliver him peach after peach after peach, and he might ruin it with his first touch. But if they understand that eventually he also will help them get assists because he also can bag hat tricks, I think he should put up stats, and I think he should do quite well in Serie A if he were to go to that league. All right, David, like we do every Thursday, at least when there's not an international break, we look ahead to the weekend in Serie A, and we do that by doing game picks with you and Thousand Names. So who do we got for this weekend?
All right, so first match, Thousand Names as usual pick the games that we're both going to pick. We have Juve traveling to San Siro to face Inter. Thousand Names has Inter winning 1-0, goal by Politano. By now, you know, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore. He says Luciano Spalletti is going to give a lesson to Allegri, who still is focused on the humiliation in the Champions League. He says Skriniar is going to humiliate Ronaldo. And speaking of humiliating, former Inter president Moratti is going to do the three sign for the treble right in Andrea Agnelli's face. In Italian, Inter Juve 1-0, Politano, Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, l'azione di Luciano ad Allegri, con ancora l'umiliazione Champions nella testa, Cristiano umiliato da Skriniar, Moratti alza il tripletto in faccia ad Agnelli. Now, Juve has absolutely nothing to play for. Inter can get closer to a Champions League spot. I'm going to agree with Thousand. I'm going to have Inter winning 2-1, and I'll give Lautaro Martinez and Perisic goals, and I'll give Dybala a goal for Juve. Next match, Samp Lazio. Thousand Names has Samp winning 3-0, hat-trick by De Frel. He says manager Giampaolo is going to explain what football is all about to Limone Inzaghi. That's a play on words, Lemon Inzaghi. He says Lazio is the flop of the season and that Audero continues to be a ridiculous keeper. So in Italian, Samp Lazio 3-0, De Frel tripletta, Giampaolo spiega il pallone a Limone Inzaghi, Lazio flop assoluto dell'anno, Audero resta un portiere ridicolo. I'm going to sound like a broken record. Samp's a good home team. I think Lazio at this point are all in on the Coppa Italia. I think the Champions League spot is pretty difficult for them. Samp also had a really tough loss against Bologna. But I'm going to say all things considered, I'm going to have it 1-1. I'm going to give Quagliarella and Immobile goals. Last match, we have Milan traveling to Turin to face the Granata. Really important match for the Champions League. Thousand has Milan winning 1-0. He has Çalhanoğlu scoring. He says that Gattuso is going to rob Mazzarri, and that he says that at least Torino's president Cairo is going to be happy because he won't have to pay out the prize for reaching European qualifications to his players. So key match, man. Milan was really poor yesterday. Torino's on the rise. I'm going to go. Torino and Milan have both good defenses. I'm going to go 0-0 here on that one. So while we're on the subject of Lazio and Milan, I want to briefly talk about what happened yesterday in the Coppa Italia match. Unfortunately, as I hinted at the top, this has been a dark year for calcio as a whole. There's just no way around it. I wrote about it in my weekly blog for our patrons on Calcioland. I really see Atalanta as being the only really great storyline in Serie A. More of the same for those that didn't follow. We had a more racist chance. We had a fascist demonstration in the center of Milan. Just really, really horrible. But again, it goes back to me, this is a problem that's much bigger than calcio. This is a cultural problem in Italy. You know, I definitely get the outrage from fans, but unfortunately, you know, if you try to apply the standards, I know a lot of our listeners in the United States, applying our standards of the United States to what Italy is right now, I mean, something like that would have never happened over here. I saw the Italian Federation made a pretty strong statement today, but again, we need to see action. So I'm not ignoring the storyline. It's just, unfortunately, it's more of the same. I barely feel qualified to talk about culture and transfer, so you can imagine a topic like that. But definitely a very difficult season for culture as a whole. But guess what? Let's talk about a great storyline in Serie A. So let's talk about Atalanta with our friend Bruno Buttaro. I just want to point out we did record this interview before their Coppa Italia semifinal match against Fiorentina. So one team that I feel has been over a pretty difficult year for calcio overall. When I look at the landscape of Italian football, this hasn't been a great season, but really one of the, probably the best story in all of Serie A is Atalanta's season. We're recording this on Tuesday, the day after they beat Napoli at the San Paolo, and we're joined by our Atalanta expert, the excellent Bruno Buttaro, who is currently over at DAZN Global in Germany. We had Bruno come on at the beginning of February. Atalanta's continued to perform really well, so we wanted to catch up with him. So Bruno, bentornato to Calcioland. It's always a real pleasure to speak to you.
Hello, everyone.
Okay. So, Bruno, I know some of the questions that I sent you today are pretty similar to what we did the last time. But the reason I wanted to highlight this is, you know, unlike maybe the Juve, the Inter, and the Milan clubs that our listeners hear a lot about, I think it's important for them to hear really the big storylines on Atalanta. So I'm going to start with a question I asked you back at the beginning of February. And you've been a long-term fan of Atalanta. You've seen a lot of teams there. Is this Atalanta season the most exciting one that you followed as a fan of the club in your lifetime?
Well, many of the Calcioland listeners will already know, but for the newcomers, I'll say it again. Definitely yes, because this is the best Atalanta I've ever witnessed from the point of view of the results. And also, if we analyze the football that has been played on the pitch, that's definitely a yes for me. This team is extremely amazing, even for the neutrals that just love the game to watch. Gasperini's fast-paced football is also a very good spot for Serie A, whose teams are usually labeled as boring and only defensive. Atalanta is completely different from that.
Yeah, definitely. Not only, I would say, defensive, and also Atalanta, they run a ton. They run teams over, and you don't. That's really like a rhythm you see maybe in other leagues, not so much in calcio. So now, as I mentioned, we are recording this after they beat Napoli. So they're right there in the race for a Champions League spot. So let me ask you, if you had to put a percentage on Atalanta finishing in the top four spot, what percentage would you give right now?
Well, also here for the newcomers that didn't listen to our old episode in February, in which I said yes to the fourth place. Well, I would say yes again, this time with a 60% because, you know, experience and all that stuff. But by the way, Atalanta may qualify for the Champions League and I will still keep my word, I said in February. I already said some months ago when the team wasn't at the fourth place, so why I should change opinion right now after that Napoli game. By the way, this team has nothing to lose. If we compare La Dea with, for example, Roma and Milan, that are fighting to avoid financial fair play issues and basically survival in this kind of modern football, if they don't get the fourth place, they're forced to sell out all their best players or mostly some of their best players. So Atalanta are not forced to do anything. They're just pleased as they're playing football. And they will sell players anyway because it's just how the club keeps on being sustainable. But as we saw, they sell players and they can already replace them with some young players. So that's an enormous strength.
So now let's talk about Gasperini, who I think is, you know, in a lot of ways, maybe the star on Atalanta, the manager, as I mentioned, you know, they really, and you said it as well, they don't play like other Serie A teams. We see the pace, the attack. Like right now, as we're recording this, Atalanta has the second best attack in all of Serie A, one less goal of Ronaldo's Juve. So if you were to describe to someone that's not that familiar to Gasperini, like what stands out to you as him as a manager?
Well, first of all, Gasp is a leader, but actually he's a coach able to take the best out of his players. And that's the thing that stands out. After all, his staff also did an amazing job athletically, and the tactical power of the team and the offensiveness of the roster with a 3-4-3 that's really, really year after year more and more going forward show that the play comes before the result and also beyond. And incredibly, then the results arrive with two straightforward European qualifications, but that's because the team is just focused to play well. And this season, we are going to witness a third one in a row, which is something unprecedented for Atalanta in history. And that's thanks to Gasperini, because he is the only one in the history of the club that really, really took the best out of any player he had. Well, clearly, there can be maybe some exceptions, but if we see like the journeys of Kessier, of Gagliardini, and then the others, that's what happened. And so that's his real strength.
Okay. Yeah, certainly agree there. So now let's talk about my favorite player on Atalanta, who I think has been, he is up there in when we talk about the best players in Serie A talent-wise, and this is Iličić, who I feel his whole career, and probably for good reason, was known as, you know, genius regolatezza, like a genius at time, then some matches where he really wasn't trying too hard. So there was always the caveat, Iličić is a world-class player on his day when he tries and he cares. But I feel like this season he's had so many of these games that maybe we can retire that caveat and just talk about him as really a world-class offensive player. So let me ask your take. You think it's fair that we stop saying, talk about his inconsistency and just talk about his brilliance? And how much of a factor do you think Gasperini is on his performances?
Well, definitely. Of course, he has become that kind of player. He has not just one day. He at 31 years old, I believe, he's in his prime and has never before like that in his career. He even told some reporters back in Palermo, if you remember, that he wanted to quit football due to some problems out of the pitch. It was 22 years old, and he didn't look like a player that was having fun playing football back then. Now things have changed. And that's thanks to Gasperini, as you were saying, because it's Iličić clearly seems to have fun on the pitch. That's a key point in his evolution as a player. And this is why he is now looking like not a one-day player, but he's like that every week. So, yeah, he's really, really amazing to watch.
Yeah, I have to say, I think he's been maybe even more impressive than Papu Gomez, which I know for Atalanta fan, you're probably hearing it sounds sacrilegious, but he's been that good, in my opinion. So let me ask you, you know, you give Atalanta 60% chance to make the Champions League. I like that you were confident about this back in February. So let me ask you, who do you think are the three most important players, not necessarily the best, but the three most important players for your prophecy to be fulfilled and Atalanta making it to the Champions League?
Well, yeah, the first I would say we already mentioned, and is Josip Iličić, because he's really, really crucial. We can remember the beginning of the season when he was injured, and the team lost many points, and then as he got back, the team got back too. So he's the first crucial element. But then there are a couple more. The midfield duo consisting of De Roon and Freuler, that are basically playing like one man, as much as they're perfect all together and unifying like all the balls that come in and go out to the strikers like Iličić and Papu Gomez, that Papu is now the regista of the team. He's just a second striker as he was in the first year of Gasperini. Now he's like an offensive regista, and Iličić took back the role that Papu Gomez had. So the core of the game now consists of Iličić, De Roon, and Freuler. Without all these three players, Atalanta would not have as much as chances as they have. And they represent, I think, the core of Atalanta. And Atalanta must not lose that core in the last weeks of this Serie A season, or something bad will happen. Maybe this Champions League race is really tight, but if you lose many points, you will be out of the Europa League race too, because Torino are pushing and having points. So it's really, really tight and very interesting.
Okay, so let's talk about something that happened today. Sad in day in the world of Atalanta. President Percassi posted something on Atalanta's site to remember Mino Favini, who is the historical scout at Atalanta, who passed away today. He was in his early 80s. So, you know, anyone who's followed calcio for a while, you know, knows that Atalanta, maybe not so much now because they have a lot of foreigners on the team, but for a long time, they were like the vivaio d'Italia, like a ton of good young Italian players came through. And we saw a few of the players Favini discovered on over the years thank him on social media today. We had Bonaventura and Montolivo. We've had other players like Pippo Inzaghi, Morfeo, Tacchinardi, the former Juve midfielder, goalkeeper Consigli. So he really discovered a lot of these. So tell our listeners a little bit about Mino Favini, and what do you think, you know, his impact was on the club over the years?
Well, everyone says that he was much more than a football scout. He kind of invented also the way scouting is done in Bergamo nowadays. And everyone also says that he was like a father to the club's players, like a second father, because we talk about players that are like 12 years old and they leave the family, so they need like this kind of figure. And they grow up in Zingonia, which is a quite an unpleasant area of the Bergamo province. And the training center, like those days in the winter, they come at like the sun goes down at 5 p.m. and you need somebody like that, that is like a mentor for them. And he is the one that Atalanta need to thank deeply for the academy, that now is a key force in the youth development, because even though you see like those Gosens and Castagne players that are coming from abroad, you always see the Gianluca Mancinis, we can say.
Yeah.
If we witness players like him, it's thanks to his job. Also, now with foreigners like Musa Barro, they're also trained by Mino Favini. And now I also remember that back in like 3 years ago, I was doing a piece about Roberto Gagliardini for FC Inter's website. And I called Mino Favini on the telephone and I spoke with him for just 5 minutes. This is just the thing that I am recalling right now. And I remember that even though he wasn't working with Atalanta anymore, he knew all the players because, of course, he was working for Como. And he told me that the 99 generation of Atalanta, which is like the one of Bastoni, Melegoni, and Bastoni is now at Parma, for example, but he knew all the names of the guys that were the last that he saw as Atalanta's youth development supervisor. So he was really nice with me, and he had that kind of voice, like really a second father. He looked like he was caring for the boys, even though those boys were not anymore his boys. So like some kind of children that went away of a house. And that's really, really something that stayed in my mind, because he's like really, really a second father for most of those players passing from Bergamo. That's something I will never forget, of course.
Very, very interesting insight. So let's close on this, Bruno. And as always, thank you so much, because it's great to get your firsthand perspective on Atalanta. I know we talked a little bit about this the previous times we had you on. So not only is Atalanta on a great roll on the pitch, they have a strong chance of making the Champions League. They're a great story, but things could get even better. Actually, they are going to get better because they are working on modernizing their stadium. So tell a little bit our listeners what's going on with the stadium and how much do you think this will help Atalanta moving forward?
Yeah, well, unlike other places in Italy, we already told that Bergamo's municipality decided to stop earning all the money benefits for club stadium and allowed Atalanta to buy it directly, and so to become like a real modern club, which is an exception in the Italian football system. So now the plan is to tear down the two curve, and which are basically for the newcomers also of Italian football, the two sections of the stadium in which the hardcore fans are sitting. Atalanta is the Curva Nord, the northern curva, and there is also the southern curva, which is named after Pier Mario Morosini, a football player that died 3 years ago in Livorno. And now they will be torn down and rebuilt in a modern manner. The northern curva will be looking like Borussia Dortmund 1, of course, a little smaller, but the model is that it will be on safe standing also. And they will be unified with the Marathon Tribune, like from an architectural point of view. And those Marathon Tribune and the Tribuna Giulio Cesare, and also the original Tribune, the Press Tribune, can't be demolished, as they have an historical value. So it's a project quite similar to the Bologna stadium, but far more ahead in the realization, because in May we'll see like the cranes and everything coming there in Bergamo. Having Percassi as president, as he's a businessman in real estate and construction, that of course helped a lot. But in a short term, it will be quite interesting to see how Atalanta will cope with it, because in May, as a team will fight for Champions League, they will be forced to play in Reggio Emilia, 2 hours away from home, because the works will be starting. So there are decisive matches towards the club's first Champions League qualification. It's a first time, so that's impressive. Will be played away. And Reggio is really, well, it's a nice stadium. And for Atalanta, it brings back good memories from a fantastic Europa League campaign. But it's quite hard to play so far from home. So it's 1 hour and a half when there is no traffic, but there is always a huge traffic jam when you go out of the autostrada, like the autobahn. So when you go out of that highway in English, you're really stuck in that traffic for another hour and a half. So for the fans, it's a really, really tough, like away day. And it's not easy to play those two games in May away from home. So it will be another challenge for Atalanta, and we'll see how they will do that. This is why I said 60%, because I'm not so confident for the other 40%, because if it was in Bergamo, I was really, really quite sure about Atalanta managing to go to Europe directly, to Champions League directly, which is something beyond amazing for like somebody like me that had a Serie B season ticket in 2010, like just 10 years ago it was.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, and actually, that's actually a really good point on the stadium construction and Atalanta not playing at home. But in any event, Bruno, that's the great insight that you bring to Calcioland all the time. I can't thank you enough. As a fan of Calcio, this would be great if Atalanta makes it all the way, because we do need a good story. And I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and giving us your perspective on this great story. So I look forward to chatting with you again very soon.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much from my side.
All right. Great to hear from Bruno, and always great to hear about other teams that we don't necessarily talk about every episode. So really good to hear about Atalanta. All right, David, it's also really good to hear the Twitter questions that we get to do every episode. And as you said at the top, our listeners really brought it with these Twitter questions for this episode. So let's do the first one. David, who would you consider to be the current hipster team in Serie A?
Yeah, I mean, it has to be the team we just talked about, Atalanta. You know, they play really attractive style, that offensive trio of Ilicic, Zapata, Papu Gomez. Really, really exciting. Three players that complement each other really, really well. If I had to pick another one, I would say Torino. But again, they're more of a defensive team. I've been on a really on the Torino bandwagon all season. I wrote about both these teams on The Athletic. They're taking very different approaches and really taking it to the next level. So I would say it's these two for sure.
Okay, fair enough. Moving on. David, who is your most improved player of the Serie A season?
So I'm going to go with a SPAL striker, Petagna, as my top choice. I was big on Lazzari last season at SPAL. I think he's made an improvement as well. I would say Romagnoli also took a step up. He was already one of the best center backs in Serie A. I think now he reached the elite level. So I'm going to put, kind of those three. But if I had to pick one, I'm going to say Petagna.
Okay, nice. All right, David, next Twitter question. Who would you say are the most interesting Serie A players off the pitch?
So this is a pretty broad question. I mean, you know, who do I find to be the most interesting interview? Probably Nainggolan, because he's always going to be very honest and probably say something controversial. So I'm going to say him. As far as, you know, interesting person, I would say this is probably a player that maybe not everyone's very familiar with. It's Torino defender De Silvestri. He is, you know, he recently became a university grad in business management. I see he's often tweeting about the fact he's going to art galleries. He really strikes me as a Renaissance man. So I would say him. He's no longer in Serie A. I would say I've really enjoyed the Marchisio's new woke phase, where he's not afraid to get political and delve into social opportunities, but he's no longer a Serie A player. And I want to take this opportunity to wish all the best to Claudio. Had another knee surgery recently. But I have to say, you know, the silver lining maybe of this injury is we're going to see more of him on talking about social issues. And I know we were talking earlier about the big problems facing Italian society as a whole. I really wouldn't mind if after he retires, Marchisio maybe wants to get into politics. I actually think it could work quite well.
Okay. How about this? Do you think there's going to be a blockbuster move in Serie A this summer?
So I'll say this, as I was doing some digging on Icardi, Lukaku, I asked a few people that I know. And again, I want to point out, when I say I talk to people, it's not Di Marzio, who I haven't asked the transfer question in years. I don't want people to assume that. But a few people that I talked to, there's one who knows a lot, and he told me, be ready, this is going to be a really crazy summer in Serie A. So I think we're going to be very busy on the podcast covering this, and I'm excited.
Oh, boy. Get your popcorn out, folks. That is very exciting. Okay. Who would win? This is good. David, who would win in a fight between Gattuso and Montero?
A great question. So for our younger listeners, Montero was a really tough defender on Juve during the Moggi years, one of the toughest, not afraid to hurt opponents. I wouldn't call him dirty, but very, very physical. So I have to say, I'm going to pick Montero. And the reason I say that is I think Gattuso, we always expected him. He was a fiery guy, and everyone expected him at Milan to be this drill sergeant. I can't say that we've seen that. I think he's always, except for a few little quotes here and there, he's always had his players' backs. So I think Gattuso's maybe, I'm not saying he's not tough, because clearly he is, but I think Montero would be more willing to throw down. And also, if you've read Pirlo's book, like Gattuso, they played a lot of pranks on him, like some pretty crazy ones on the Italian national team and at Milan. So I think they knew that he would only go so far. So I'm going to pick Montero.
Okay. So staying on Gattuso, how would you describe his coaching philosophy?
So I got to say, Alex, out of all the takes this year that I'm the most disappointed was me on Milan. Not long ago, I was confident Gattuso was staying. I thought he had done everything necessary to earn the job next season. But he really made me think of this new phrase that I'm going to use more and more on our podcast, which is simply, are we just a two-game losing streak away from sounding like idiots for praising someone? And I think I did with Gattuso, never afraid to admit when I'm wrong. I think his philosophy is really simple. I think defensively, he's done well. So in Italy, you would say prima non prenderle. So first off, not give up goals. As far as offensively, I got to wonder what they're working on over there. It seems he's just counting on a moment of individual brilliance from either Suso or Kalanoglu and hoping they can set up Piontek somehow, and that seems to be his offensive game plan. I mean, it really goes to show how much Milan has struggled without Paqueta. I wouldn't say Paqueta is Milan's best player, but I would say he's the most important player. It wasn't long ago we were wondering if investing 30 million on a player with no European experience at a time that Milan had FFP issues, if that was a wise move. I think Leonardo passed that test, because I think without him, Milan have been in big trouble.
Okay. David, which current Serie A managers would do well in the Premier League?
So look, overall, I think most Serie A managers have done well in the Premier League. Like, look, Ranieri was a good manager in Serie A, but never won a title. He won it with Leicester, of all teams. I think Conte's time at Chelsea is maybe being looked upon in maybe a better light recently. I think Sarri's really been up or down. We've had some others like Mazzarri. That really didn't work out. Guidolin, that didn't really work out. But I think overall, pretty well. I would say someone like Di Francesco. And I have to say, you know, it was interesting that our friend Alex Frosio from Gazzetta dello Sport, who really knows about tactics, he really praised Di Francesco quite a bit. De Zerbi, a manager we talk a lot about, kind of has that Barca style game plan. So I think he could do well. Look, I think Allegri at a top club, he'd do really well because of how he handles players, media, and tactics. So yeah, I think overall, Serie A managers, you'd have quite a few that would do well in the Premier League.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And yeah, sorry, it's been a roller coaster ride, but right now, somehow Chelsea are in fourth place. So got to give Sarri a little bit of credit there, that's for sure. Okay, interesting question here. Fans generally blame the manager for losses, but what percentage is on the players, David?
So I think, you know, it's kind of hard. I mean, it's different, right? It really depends on the situation. Like, does the manager have a lot of talent and maybe not getting the most out of it? Is a manager literally getting the most out of his players and having his team overachieve? So I think it really depends. I will say, you know, in a lot of cases, I see, you know, if a team wins, the players get the credit. Team loses, the manager takes the blame. And I think that's a little bit simplistic. But I'm going to add a wrinkle to it. I think all too often fans focus on their own team enough and they don't maybe give credit to the other team enough. I think Ajax against Juve is a perfect example of this. Sure, Juve could have done much better, but at the same time, Ajax were also incredibly impressive. So I'm going to answer it that way. The players on the opposing team get paid millions as well, and there's a reason for that.
Really well said. I want to touch on two things you said. Now, the players are always at fault to a certain extent when they lose a game. I mean, they're the people on the pitch who lost the game. So they always deserve some blame. And I think with the manager, it varies. It varies. Look at the game plan. Did he change his tactics? Did he put out a good starting 11? It really should vary. But it's always going to be to some extent on the players. And then really good point there about how we always just focus on our team, because I'll just take an example. Chelsea were burned lately by a couple golazos, just great, great goals. But obviously, fans of Chelsea are just like, oh no, we should have closed down better, or this person screwed up. But David, if that was our team that scored the golazos, we would be talking about how great of a goal it was. We wouldn't be talking about how the other team didn't close down quick enough. So it is always interesting to look at it through just the glasses of you as a fan of your own team. It's often looked at much differently than if you're a fan on the other side or if you're a neutral and you're a third party. So good point there. All right, so next question. Does Bentancur have the potential to be a world-class midfielder?
I'm not sure about world-class. I mean, I think he's been pretty good this season. There was a stretch towards maybe the end of 2018 where you could almost make a case he was the best midfielder on Juve for a stretch. I'm just not sure. I mean, do I think he can become like, a Pogba? And I know he's a controversial player right now. No, I don't think he can reach that level. But I think he can be like the third best midfielder on Juve and be a starter? Yeah, I think he could, but the other two better be really, really damn good.
Okay, so this, I only can laugh at this question. How much of a financial loss would Juve take if they sent Ronaldo back to Real Madrid?
So let's begin by saying that to me, and maybe I'll look incredibly stupid, to me, anyone who thinks that Ronaldo's going to leave Juve this season really knows very little about Ronaldo. That would be completely admitting defeat on his part and Juve on that. But again, maybe I'll look incredibly dumb, but that to me strikes me as something really that I don't see happening. But let's put that aside. I mean, this would be pretty similar to Bonucci going back to Juve after one season, after Milan had invested $40 million on him. Maybe there could be a player involved, like maybe Isco or Marcelo, something along those lines. If it was strictly cash, like it would have to be, I think Ronaldo signed a four-year deal. Let's say it's a four-year deal, $100 million. The amortized value each season goes down $25 million. So if Juve were to take, without taking a financial loss, assuming it's a four-year contract, they would have to sell for 75. If it's a five-year deal, they would have to sell 70 without losing money there. So you just have to divide the amount of the transfer fee divided by the length of the contract, figure out the amortized value, and calculate it that way. The flip side, though, is hypothetically, if Juve did get rid of Ronaldo, there's the amortization, but also the humongous saving in the wages But again, this is more on hypothetical because I'd be really shocked if that happens. So again, amortize value, and then you also have to count the saving on the wages.
Okay. All right. Next one. How would Manolas fit at Juve, David?
So he seems to be the center back that is most linked to Juve at the moment, has a 36 million exit clause that is valid in Italy. His agent's Raiola, great relationship with Juve. But let's look strictly on the pitch. Like, I think Manolas is right below the elite center backs in Serie A. So to me, he's below Koulibaly, Chiellini, Skriniar, Romagnoli. I think they're better. He's on the next echelon. So, yeah, I think he'd be an upgrade defensively over Bonucci, a clear upgrade over Rugani. The one thing that I'd say is very positive is Juve as a team lacks speed and pace, and Manolas is probably the fastest center back in Serie A off the top of my head, so he would bring that. So I actually think this would be a pretty good move for Juve if they make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, Matthias De Ligt is kind of the dream, but that would not be a bad backup plan. All right, David. Interesting question here. Would Ancelotti have been better off waiting a year before accepting Napoli's offer, considering he could now either have joined Juve or Inter?
Interesting question. Long and short of it, maybe, but I think the fits at Inter and Juve would have been rather difficult. For one, at Inter, his Milan past, I really doubt Ancelotti would ever consider going to Inter because of his ties to Milan. Juve, look, he was a previous Juve manager. It didn't end well there. Famously, you know, Juve fans had this saying to describe Ancelotti, il maiale non sa allenare, the pig doesn't know how to coach. They were making fun of his weight. I mean, would Ancelotti's success in the Champions League maybe make him appetite for Juve? Maybe. But I think Ancelotti, and it, look, there's a lot of pressure at Napoli. I don't want to downplay that by any reason, but it's a little bit different pressure than Juve. I think he also saw it as a life choice. He's moved right in the center of Napoli. He's really embraced the city. We'll also get into it with our friend Marco D'Onofrio in the final segment. But I'm going to disagree. I don't think he would have been better off because I don't think those other clubs were natural fits for him. Okay, so before we get to our last guest, Marco D'Onofrio, to talk about Napoli, I just wanted to briefly plug our Patreon page. We just did a bonus section of the podcast with questions just from our patrons. We have various tiers. If you like the podcast, for $3 a month, you get to hear the longer versions of the podcast. For $7 a month, you get that. You get a quarterly bonus podcast, which we just did. You also get at least 2 weekly articles from me on Serie A or transfers. In the summer, I'm going to be covering a lot of transfer stuff there, so I think you'll really enjoy that package. We also have a other package for those of you that create content. So we really appreciate your support. This podcast that you're listening will always remain free because we want to reach a bigger audience. But if you dig the content that you hear on the show, I'm confident you'll find the rest of the content there for a small fee to be well worth your while. And let's close on Napoli. It's been way too long since we talked about them. So here's our great friend, Cubani, Marco D'Onofrio. Okay, so I have to say, you know, we like to cover all the teams in Serie A, try not to focus too much on the same things, but I feel like we haven't talked enough about Napoli recently. So we're going to make up for that today with our dear friend Marco D'Onofrio. You guys have heard him on our podcast many times on Twitter. He's at Cubani7. He's a Serie A expert, especially on Napoli. You guys can read him on Football Italia. He's based in Toronto. You can also read him on the excellent Soccer 360 Mag. And soon he's going to come back with one of the best shows out there on Calcio, Stadio Serie A. We're going to ask Marco about that at the end. So, Marco, it's always such a pleasure to chat with you. Welcome back to Calcio Land.
David, the pleasure is always mine, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so I have to say, Marco, unfortunately, this hasn't been a very fruitful stretch for Napoli, to say the least. So we're recording this on Monday, shortly after the loss to Atalanta. So let's start with that. Like, I feel like in Serie A, Napoli doesn't have much at all to play for. But what was your takeaway from what we saw today against Atalanta?
Honestly, watching the game, I actually was laughing at one point because Napoli just kept squandering opportunity after opportunity. And when it was still 1-0, I was thinking to myself, Atlanta has to make Napoli pay. I mean, this is an Atlanta side that needs the W and needs the 3 points. And you know what? Surely enough, they did. Zapata came through and scored the first. He set up the second, and he took advantage of his old stomping grounds. You know what? Hats off to Atlanta because they need the win. And from a Napoli point of view, it's frustrating because, again, they had the opportunities. They had 3 one-on-ones with the keeper, Milik, Mertens, and Zielinski. You would think one of them would be able to convert, and they couldn't. Milik gets an opportunity, puts the ball 3/4 across the line, starts celebrating before he finishes it off, and they paid the price for it. And I kept thinking to myself, this is the biggest difference, and has been for years the biggest difference between Napoli and Juventus, where Napoli can play incredible football and entertaining football, but doesn't get the result all the time, where Juventus is the complete opposite. Sometimes they look like they're outplayed, they're dominated, but at the end of the day, they find a way to take 3 points, and that's critical. And we haven't seen Napoli do that enough lately.
Yeah, so at least on the bright side in Serie A, like I mentioned, Napoli, you know, is going to finish back in the Champions League. But the more disappointing result was in the Europa League, which, you know, it felt like this could really have been a great opportunity for Napoli. So you've been following the team closely for a while. It feels in a lot of cases Napoli's been close but no cigar. Where do you rank this elimination in the Europa League as far as disappointing results in, let's say, the past 4 or 5 years?
It's definitely up there. But to be honest, I mean, like, the biggest has to be the Fiorentina game, the Inter-Juve Fiorentina-Napoli weekend that was about a week ago last year. And that was number one. And this is definitely frustrating, but I'll be honest, I don't even know if this is the most disappointing moment of the season in regards to that Liverpool loss in the final group stage game. I think hurt even more. I mean, not that I thought Napoli had a chance to win the Champions League, but I thought it would have sent a real message, and it would have been great for Ancelotti had he gotten out of that group stage. So while it is definitely disappointing not to get by Arsenal, and a lot of fans wanted Europa League, and it would have been nice to see. The pessimistic side of me was thinking that Napoli would have lost to Chelsea, Higuain 90th minute winner anyways in the final. So maybe it's a little bit of relief too, but it is frustrating and it's disappointing, but it is what it is. And again, I think that Liverpool loss stings even more than this one.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. So now, you know, again, don't want to be a broken record. I'd say, you know, Napoli season, if it ended today, that's, I would say for the most part, this is how it's going to end anyway. So if you had to give a grade, and you can use whichever scale you want, what would you give to Napoli, assuming they finish second to Juve in Serie A?
I'll look at what I had predicted or what I thought the goals were coming into the season. And I thought, I predicted Napoli third in Serie A. I thought they would go to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, and I actually thought they'd win the Coppa Italia. So they failed the Coppa Italia goal quite heavily. You know, the Champions League, I'm willing to give them a sort of a pass because of that group. But at the same time, Europa League, I thought that was disappointing as well. And then, you know, Serie A, they finished second. Big deal whether they finish second, third, or fourth, as long as they get into the group, the Champions League group stage next season. So I'm going to give them a B- because I actually thought it wasn't too bad of a campaign, but I think in the cup competitions, that was definitely disappointing because I think that's Ancelotti's biggest strength. And the fact that they were still able to finish second, I mean, quite significantly behind Juventus, it's good. I mean, in the sense that, you know, I thought Inter would take a big step up this year, and Napoli proved that they're still the second best team in Italy right now. So in that regard, I think a B- is a fair grade.
Okay. So now let's look forward to next season. And I'm going to start with a question I've been asking all of our regulars that cover a team on our podcast. So you know, let's say Napoli wants to take a step forward next season, want to be closer to Juve, compete, you know, get out of the group stage in the CL, do better in the Coppa Italia. If that's the goal, and I'm assuming it is, which of the current players on the team do you think are good enough to be starters next season?
That's a very good question. I mean, to be honest, I think you're going to see, I mean, I think a good majority of them are there. They have the, what it takes. I mean, you look at the midfield. The midfield's quite stacked. You know, you have Fabian Ruiz. You have Alain. You have, you know, whether Diawara stays or not. Like, I think Zielinski, I think that's an important midfield right there. But I definitely think Napoli needs some help at the back. I think that's the biggest area they need to address. I mean, they still don't have a proper replacement for Albiol. I mean, if he's not in the lineup, Napoli don't have a partner for Koulibaly that's good enough. And I think that's a major concern. A guy like Mario Rui should never be on playing on the pitch for a team like Napoli that's trying to win a Scudetto. It just, he's not good enough. You know, I mean, he's got certain skills, but he's not good enough. Simple as that. So I think Hisai's taken a major step back this year. He's been a real disappointment. So I think there's definitely question marks around there. And then, of course, up top, you know, you wonder, does Napoli need a proper striker? And the inconsistency of Milik can be so frustrating because there's weekends you watch him and he's your favorite player. And then there's weekends you watch him and you question how he's even playing in Serie A right now. So I think that can be frustrating. So if they could get a more consistent striker up top to partner Milik, I think that would be a smart purchase. But I think they definitely have the skeleton and the bones there. It's just at the end of the day, Napoli, we both know Napoli's not going to be able to go out and buy the players that are going to be required to compete with a team like Juventus next season. It's just, it's not feasible.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree. Last season, we saw, you know, what a slim, slim margin Napoli has to compete with Juve. So now let's talk about Ancelotti. So I've had one of our listeners send me this question. So I'm kind of going to paraphrase it to you and say, if you were to look at this season as Ancelotti's opportunity to really get to know the squad, figure out which players are good enough for his system and what he wants to do, would you say that's an overly optimistic way of looking at it? So in another way, do you have faith that Ancelotti is the man to lead Napoli moving forward, or do you think, you know, he had struggled at his job before? Some people saw that he's coming to Napoli and he's certainly enjoying living in the city as an early retirement. So I think, you know, both these things are maybe a little bit extreme, but kind of how do you see this whole situation?
Yeah, maybe it's a little bit of everything you said. I mean, I'm going to say the early retirement thing seems a little ludicrous to me, just in the sense that Napoli's not the city you go to for an early retirement. There's going to be enough pressure on you and you can't escape that pressure. So I wouldn't buy that, just because there's other places he can go to that if he really wanted to retire. I mean, I believe his wife's Canadian also. I mean, if he wanted to, he could just come over to MLS or play in a top league over here and enjoy life over here in a warmer part of the world. But with that said, I think there's a lot of question marks still around Ancelotti. I think at the end of the day, I mean, he was brought in here to bring a European mentality. And unfortunately, in the biggest games, they didn't have that European mentality, right? I mean, we talked about Arsenal. We talked about that game against Liverpool. So he definitely deserves some criticism there. But I do think it was a transition year. And especially when he took over a team that played under Sarri, that played such a unique style, it was always going to be difficult to come in. And I thought he actually made that transition real smooth. They actually did a lot better at the start of the season than I had anticipated, just because it was such a drastic change in tactics. And Ancelotti deserves a ton of credit for not coming in here and trying to change everything right away. He actually used Sarri ball to his advantage. And there was times earlier this year that Napoli looked like they were still playing under Sarri, right? But and maybe that's the problem, is maybe they're losing a little bit of that. And that's where they struggled in the second half of the season. But I think that he is probably the right guy to lead this team forward. I can't say that 100% with confidence, because, again, there's still some question marks. But I think the stability and the mentality that he can bring is important. And we'll see if he's here for just a couple of years, or if he really can be almost like a Ferguson and Napoli that De Laurentiis keeps talking about. Because if he can do that and he can bring that stability here, then I think he is the right man to lead this team going forward.
So now let's talk about Insigne, who at the beginning of the season actually was one of the players that seemed to really gain the most from Ancelotti's arrival, was using him kind of in a slightly different position. And Insigne got off to like really a great start. It feels like a really a long time ago when we talk about Insigne because a lot has happened. So let me ask you two questions on him. Hey, what do you make about his season so far? And do you think Napoli should maybe consider selling him? You know, he is at the age where he's really at the peak of his value, would probably only go down. He has a substantial salary for Napoli. So kind of how would you handle that situation?
Yeah, it's one of those situations that you look at it and you have a lot of questions around it, because at the start of the season, people forget that he was easily Napoli's best player. I mean, he might have been the best player in Serie A at one point. And what was the record? He had set the first Italian player to score in 5 consecutive Champions League games or something like that. And who's huge in those big games. So when people are saying that he doesn't get it done in big games, he proved in the early Champions League group stage games against the PSGs, against Liverpool, that, you know what, he can perform when you need him to. It's just not consistent enough. And to be honest, I feel like it's maybe that armband that's really weighing on him now that Hamzik is gone and now that he is the formal captain of this team. I mean, I could be completely wrong on that, but being the hometown kid and the hometown hero and having all these expectations on him, and unfortunately, the fans are harshest on him too at times, right? I mean, they never hesitate to boo him after or jeer him after a poor game, and that's rather unfortunate. And we saw how much. I mean, people, you know, want to criticize his reaction when he was subbed off against, you know, Arsenal in the Europa League game. But you also got to remember that it probably meant more to him than anybody else on that pitch. And it was just frustration. And then to have the fans that, you know, you go out there every game for cheering you after, you know, you turn down opportunities to leave, that's got to be weighing on him. And so I'm very curious because, I mean, don't forget his agent is also not one to shy away from transfers. You know, he's got Mino Raiola representing him.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens there. But I think Napoli would be foolish to let Insigne go just because of what he represents and what he means to the club and what he can mean to the city. It's just you got to have the right players around him. And I think more than anything, maybe that's what Napoli's lacking right now, is some real leaders and some real winners. Because I think Napoli's problem is a mentality one more so than anything else. And I don't know if Insigne has the right mentality, but clearly I think the armband's weighing on him. And I wouldn't sell him. I really, really wouldn't. But who knows what will happen? Because as you know, anything can happen in, you know, that transfer window.
For sure. So speaking of the transfer window, I asked you a lot about the current team, but which positions would you like Napoli to focus on in the coming months?
Defensively, for sure. I think that's got to be dealt with. I think, you know, they could use some help. You know, I mean, Goulam coming back has been a major help, and I think he's still not 100%. So once he gets back and has a full preseason under his belt, I think that'll make a difference. But I would like to see, you know, Napoli address, you know, the right back position, get another center back in there. I think that more than anything needs to be dealt with. And then, again, it depends who Napoli sells, if anybody, right? I think with the likes of Verdi and Mertens and Insigne and Caillon, and I mean, who knows if all these guys will stay, but and Onis and Yunus, I mean, they've got tons of players that can play out wide, and they've got the small, quick, dynamic players. It's just... I question whether they need a legitimate, ruthless striker, because Milik has shown he can be that, but just not consistently enough. And maybe if you do bring in a Cavani, which I know is the pipe dream, and, you know, I don't know if it's feasible or possible, but you bring in somebody like that, it would make a difference. So, but more so than anything right now, anyways, I think it's at the back.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. It's been a lot on my mind. I wrote a column on it recently. I've been looking Higuain, for a lot of reasons, one of my favorite players to write about, because, you know, he's very flawed. He's kind of like, you know, like a regular person, not an image that's really curated. So he's had a rough stretch. Like yesterday, there was this interview where he said, you know, he barely wants to leave the house anymore because he gets criticized
so much. He's been a pariah with Milan fans, even with Juve fans. He was one of many stars. But in my opinion, he should have never left Napoli. I think he would have been much, much better off. So I know you do, as a Napoli fan, he's maybe a sore subject because of how he left and whatnot. But just looking at it from his perspective, do you think if he could go back in time, would he be better off just staying with Napoli?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, Higuain is so interesting, right? He's such a polarizing figure, right? I mean, you either love the guy, you hate him, and hindsight's always 20/20, and I think it was had been a mistake at the time, to be honest. But yeah, I think you're right, in the sense that had he stayed in Napoli, one, I think he could have been the deciding factor in that Scudetto run last year. I think if Higuain was playing on Napoli instead of Juventus, I think Napoli wins the Scudetto. So, and if that was the case, he would have gone down as a god, right? And had he not won the Scudetto with Napoli, and he still had 3-4 crazy seasons like he had in his last year under Sarri, he would still have gone down as a god. He was worshipped in Napoli. And, you know, you can make the argument, would Napoli have been better off with him? I don't know. I mean, again, I think he makes that difference in the Scudetto race last year. But, yeah, I think he should have stayed. At the end of the day, you look at where his career's gone, because even when he was on Juventus, you know, and they went to the Champions League final in his first season, he was still never a beloved player. You know, he was remarkable and fans appreciated him, but he was never truly loved at Juventus. And it was also one of the reasons that they were so quick to get rid of him when they had the opportunity to sign Ronaldo, right? Because he was brought in to win the Champions League, and he was looked at almost like a mercenary, where he wasn't necessarily a Juventino, but he was there to get a job done that ultimately they couldn't get it done. And, you know, that's why Ronaldo's on the team now and he's not. And he went to Milan, and I think he potentially had an opportunity to be loved at Milan and try to help rescue a franchise. It just, I don't know if they were ready for him yet. And his body language, he just never had, he never was the leader that you need in a locker room to carry a team. He's the icing on the cake, and that's why I think he worked well at Juventus, but he hasn't worked out very well at Chelsea currently, although he scored a great goal today, and he didn't work out in Milan. So yeah, I think ultimately probably would have been better off at Napoli, and who knows, he might have a Scudetto as well.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I actually think you can make a case that you could say for him better off, for Napoli not necessarily, because they did very well reinvesting the money and keeping Koulibaly. So interesting take. So let's close on this, Marco. You know, I love talking to you, and we get great feedback every time you're on our show. But people want to hear more of you talking about calcio. And you had really one of the original shows for calcio, and that's Stadio Serie A. So when are you guys coming back? We're all waiting.
Yeah, I know. I appreciate that. And I do apologize for keeping everybody waiting. And we're very secretive of what we've got going on, but we are excited and expect something new from us in the next couple of weeks, which we're all really, really excited for. So things did get a little bit delayed, but you know what? Patience is a virtue, and we appreciate everybody standing by us, and we're excited for what's to come. So stay with us, and you'll definitely hear something from us in the next couple of weeks. So thanks to everybody. And David, thanks for you having me on your show as often as you do, because I love talking Napoli, and I think you do a fantastic job on here.
Awesome. Well, Marco, it's always a real pleasure to chat with you. Thank you for sharing your insight, and we're going to hold you to it. We're all waiting for Serie A to come back. But even when you return, we always look forward to chatting with you here. So thanks again for joining me, and I'll chat with you real soon.
For sure.
That's the show for today. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to everyone who sent in a question. As you guys know, we record a lot of these. So if you have another question on Serie A, transfers, TV, music, film, please send it in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And if you enjoyed the show, this is a free show available to all. Please leave us a review on iTunes. It takes 2 seconds to leave us a 5-star rating. If you leave a comment, Alex and I read them all. And these testimonials are great because they are from our listeners. They help us attract a bigger audience. And if you like all the content on the CalcioLand podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We have various tiers for you just to listen enhanced version of the podcast. We have a tier where you can read a lot of original blogs from me. We'll have Alex once in a while do a video, and I answer a lot of questions there. I think that'll be a lot of fun year-round, and especially during the transfer window. So thank you very much for the support, and we look forward to chatting with you in the next few days.